I met this artist named Christian Nerf last year. I was interviewing him for a project. I definitely did not realize how famous he was until after the fact. He had a scraggly gray-brown beard and was bald. He had big, round glasses, thick and black. The tops of the frames were especially prominent, forming what looked like eyebrows. We got to the topic of process. I have no idea what I said. I was probably trying to crystallize something, trying to make too much sense out of a bunch of accumulated objects that were not ready to make sense. I must have made some vague and loaded statement about art or writing that made no sense to anyone but myself. I had so much at stake. Christian listened. I do not remember his reaction specifically. He probably just saw the wheels turning, knowing I had some figuring out to do. He looked at me through those glasses. They magnified his eyes like a mad scientist. Originally, I thought the glasses were goofy, but I had gotten used to them. Christian was contemplative, but at ease, smoking a joint he offered me. Then he said, "The biggest hurdle to overcome as a creative person is getting oneself into the right mindset to be creatively productive." He said it much more eloquently than that. One of those statements, so short and to the point. I swear it was like a 10-word sentence. Creating a space for yourself, one in which you can be creative in a productive way. Let go of everything. A space of non-judgment. A space without morals. You've turned off a part of your brain for the time being. That is the hardest thing. But it made so much sense. I wrote it down. I was also recording the conversation on my laptop, but then my computer was stolen, and I left my notebook on a plane. Both were devastating, but probably for the best. I picture myself otherwise trying to frame a quotation, hang it beside my bed. That would have been horrible and useless. So you have these moments of clarity, mostly interspersed with groping, having an idea of something without really knowing. Between these moments of clarity, you end up imitating David Foster Wallace. The problem is that does not work. You are looking at the object, not even realizing the condition imminent to the object, and the fact that the condition is the most important and hardest thing to recognize almost undermines the object in and of itself. It was the accumulation of these objects that made me say, "Hey, what's making these objects?" And that is such a difficult question to answer. I want to explain and understand things as thoroughly as possible, to the nth degree. It gets me so worked up. Everyone is always asking me why everything is such an ultimatum, Matt. My friend Sam once said, "I'm perpetually having an identity crisis, at least compared to everyone else." We were sitting in front of his TV. His parents were getting divorced, and he had just come out to me an hour earlier. And then there was the fact that I would not even talk about my writing, my stories. It was so sensitive, so vague and loaded. I had so much at stake. I alienated myself and others with my cryptic desire that I myself refused to confront head on. Everyone was telling me this in their own way. It was coming at me from all directions. "I want to see the humanity in your writing, Matt." I was too busy choking on Wallace and everyone else I couldn't let go of. I did not realize until I asked myself why I loved Eileen Miles so much. I have read both of her memoirs. Cool for You is the only book I have ever read twice, which is funny because if you asked me for a plot summary, I could not give you one. It is simply a series of anecdotes connected through Miles' own telling. She has this zigzagging, diverging narrative. It accumulates until she turns the corner, slapping you in the face with her opinions. Some characters only appear for a page, and others return frequently. It is all very particular and coherent in its mess. A queer woman pulling together her identity while navigating a straight world. She tears people and things apart, but not without the prerequisite of doing the same to herself. There's lots I could share, but my favorite section is just after Miles has moved to San Francisco. She's sitting in a bar that reminds her of Boston. It is comforting. She has a little money. She has little money, which is fine because the man in the business suit keeps buying her drinks until she can no longer stand up straight. She tells this great story about the man's tiny, flaccid penis in a motel room. Her writing is unrestricted desire. That was it. I even met her once, sat down with her for a one-on-one. Miles was teaching at Naropa University in Boulder. At a book signing, I asked if she wanted to get coffee or something. I wanted to talk to her about a tiff she and Rick Moody had gotten into during Moody's lecture. Miles stepped up to the microphone and asked him some sort of specific question about his writing process. Moody closed off, dodging the question. Miles called him out on it, and the room became tense, an audience of 200 or so. Miles and Moody went back and forth for a few minutes before Moody ended it, saying, "I'm not sure, Eileen Miles. All I can tell you is that you're a better and more intelligent person than I am." She handed the microphone to the next person, walked off, disgusted he would end it that way. Of course, I did not tell her that was what I wanted to speak about. Instead, I explained I wanted to talk about C.A. Conrad because I love the afterword she wrote for his collection, The Book of Frank. She said sure. She even signed my copy, gave me her cell phone number, and told me to meet her at the motel where she was staying on Arapahoe Avenue. I arrived a few minutes early, walking around the parking lot. She emerged from the second floor room. Each room opened up onto the parking lot, each room opened up into the parking lot, which the building formed a U around. It had just rained. It only rains for about 10 minutes at a time in Boulder. The sun was already out again. I figured we would walk down the street to a coffee shop, but she suggested we sit in this plastic picnic table bench combination just outside the indoor pool. It was still wet from the rain. She pulled the sliding door to the pool open and threw me two towels. "Water?" she asked. She removed the plastic wrapper from two motel styrofoam cups and filled them with the Evian water dispenser. I wiped down the table and set up the two towels for us to sit. I do not remember exactly how the conversation started off. I just remember her saying she had a friend whose daughter attended Bates. She could not remember the girl's name. "That was all right," I said. When I asked her about Moody, she went off, saying how boring and capitalistic he was. He was a sellout. That was what Rick Moody was. That was about it. To be completely honest, I had never heard of Rick Moody until the day he gave that lecture. He wrote Garden State, someone told me, the book they turned into the movie. Based on that, Miles's words made sense. She spoke a bit about him and the actual incident before she ran out of steam, turning the conversation as if to say, "Why did you want to talk to me again?" I think the main issue was that I did not have any specific questions for her. So it turned into this thing where I asked her these really large questions loosely based around what should I do with the rest of my life. She told me I should move to Toronto. Not for any particular reason other than do not go to New York. It was anticlimactic, though that was probably a good thing. Eileen Miles, I sat and talked with her on a plastic bench outside of a motel once. I liked her, but she was not going to give me any answers, and that was important.